Wherever summer takes you, save on your journey with True North convenience stores and Red Bull. Enjoy the new Red Bull Summer Edition, White Peach, a perfect balance of bold, sweet, and refreshing. Right now, grab any 3 8-ounce Red Bull for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon, just in time for your next road trip. Save big all summer long with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio, you can stay up to date with everything happening here at the station by downloading the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. You can stream anytime, anywhere. You can even listen on demand. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on Twitter, on X, at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good day to you. We had an interesting evening last night of sports, I think, is the best way to put it.
Yeah, I think the question is whether or not we had a flip. Did we have a flipping? So we'll discuss that with our Thursday company, as he always is. He, of course, writes about college football, college basketball for CBS Sports on Twitter, on X, at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
It's a great day, Jeffrey. We got major championship golf on the television.
We've got a U.S. Open that feels... I'm cautiously optimistic. I did not get my hopes up with all the talk of we're going to finish with an over par champion. I did not get my hopes up on that, because while I'm obviously rooting for that, I root for the course in this one. I just always feel like the last few times everyone's been like, there's no way anyone's going under par. Like, I felt like they said about the same thing about Oakmont in 2016. Dustin got to, you know, he was whatever, I guess 5 under, and we had to take a shot away from him. So I just don't get my hopes up, but it's getting crispy. The rough is no joke. There's nothing I love more than watching the tour guys just lose their minds. It's my favorite.
Losing their minds.
It's my favorite.
But what I'm afraid of is if this rain comes through Pittsburgh over the next three days, softens it up a little bit, might make it a little bit more of a dart throwing contest, in which case I could see a winner getting to like 10 under maybe. But
can I talk you into this though?
What?
The USGA pretty much come hell or high water, they are not ever going to play lift clean in place. You thought the
mud balls,
think about how much they were whining about mud balls at Quail Hollow. Think about how much they're going to whine about mud balls and rough.
Yeah, that'll actually be insufferable.
Yeah. it'll be the best. I'll let me drink your tears. I'll go full Cartman on them.
Yeah, I know, right? I'm sure people out there are none too pleased to see that it is JJ Spahn, who is currently the leader, after firing a 4-under-66 with no bogeys. So maybe the casuals out there are like, wow, JJ Spahn's at the top of the leaderboard. What a joke of a tournament. Well, if you've been paying attention, he's actually been having a pretty good year. And he played basically flawless golf today. So I got no problems with JJ Spahn being in the lead.
It's the first time he's in the U.S. Open without having to qualify.
Yeah, wow.
It's the first time he's earned his way in from his player ranking. So we got JJ Spahn. Let me just say this. If JJ holds off 66 bogey free, it was great golf. Vegas, I think, will be pretty safe with a lot of their first round leaders bets.
I'm gonna guess you could probably still get a JJ at like 30 to 1 or something at this moment.
Oh, that'd be interesting. What is JJ live? I think it's fair to say he is clearly not going to be the favorite even live.
Well, you know, Scheffler had a birdie on two, but then he bogeyed back-to-back holes, so he's trying to figure it out a little bit. I'm still imagining that he is far and away the betting favorite at the moment. Although, Brooks Koepka, who always shows
his
face.
Yeah, we might have a Brooks another Brooks sighting.
Yeah, minus two through six. And then you got Patrick Reed with an albatross, so he's in the red right now. The live guys, you know, you can always count on at least a couple of them making it interesting at the majors.
Yeah, honestly, I hate Patrick Reed, but it's good to have Patrick Reed in the mix.
Yeah, I mean, Patrick Reed and Bryson DeChambeau are the sport's like preeminent villains, and we just don't get to see them all that
it's,
often.
It's so sad. And
they
don't
play
get
any relevance.
We've lost Use Golf Facts, one of the all-time Twitter accounts. Lady J's personal burner. Do you want to care?
I got a feeling she's still got some burners out there.
Yeah, but I guess maybe that's to your point. Maybe because Pat isn't in the mix, we're just not like aware. But do you care to guess right now what I'm seeing for JJ Spawn live?
I'm going to stick with my initial guess of 30 to 1.
I will say it is better than that.
Really? So it's like 15 to 1?
It is 11 to 1.
Wow.
You can currently go get Scotty at plus 345. He does have the second best odds. Colin Morikawa at plus 1,200. Bryson still at plus 1,495. And I think Bryson came in at, what, three over?
He did.
So that shows you Rahm at plus 1,600. I mean, Brooks at 200, you can still get him at plus 1,695.
Not bad, honestly. I would
shade under 17 to 1.
Brooks out of major? Yeah, give me that.
Especially like a tough goal. Like, this is like what he does well. It's brawny, thick, rough golf course. Like, it's not going to be a birdie fest, but it's just kind of a tough test. That's usually where Brooks has been pretty good. So we'll update you about that more during the list. We'll get into that more during hour number two. As mentioned, we'll start with the NBA Finals from last night. Eric Hasseltine, who is, we think, at Game 3. We know he was venturing to get to Game 3, but we do know he is in the Indianapolis area. So we'll get his thoughts on what we saw last night when he joins us during the next segment. We'll get into the list. Cobb has also written about, we've gotten the matchups for the SEC-ACC Challenge. Get his thoughts on that. We'll have Jason Smith join us during the second hour. We'll tell your story, and then we'll get out of here. But I guess the first question that I have, Cobb, because I wrote down a few things from last night that are, I would say, tangentially related to the finals. I think the biggest question I have is, did last night, in your mind, flip the series?
Well, in my mind, it felt like Indiana always had more of a chance than most people were willing to give them.
No, so, I when we came back on Friday, I gave you all the credit. And I know Halliburton in game one wasn't amazing up beyond like hitting the big shot. But your point all along has been their defense has not been tested with a true point guard. And Halliburton is one. And I think last night to me was a greater reflection of that. Like, I thought he played his best game by far.
Right. And also, I realized Chet Holmgren had a statistically productive game last night, more so than Miles Turner. But it just feels like Miles Turner is more physically equipped to be the sort of front court edge that no opponent of Oklahoma City has really had so far in these playoffs. And so, you know, he finishes with five blocks last night. I liked last night's game because it felt like playoff basketball. Like last year when Boston won the NBA Finals, it was, what, 40, 53-point attempts a game. Last night, I mean, I don't know if these teams combined last night for as many three-point attempts as Boston averaged per game by itself in last year's finals. And it wasn't a foul fest either. I mean, the fouls started to accumulate in the last few minutes. Indiana had some really dumb fouls in the last couple minutes when they were trying to close it out. But it wasn't a game where we were just mindlessly chucking threes and then living at the foul line. It actually felt like it had some good rhythm and good pace to it. And I was a little worried about Indiana down the stretch in the third quarter because, man, they just started turning the ball over and playing reckless. But defensively, they turned it up in the fourth quarter, never let Oklahoma City get into a rhythm. And I just thought Indiana was overall the better team in that game last night. And now Oklahoma City, your back's against the wall, man. If you go down 3-1, I mean, yeah, you're in deep trouble at that time. I realize Vegas still has Oklahoma City as a pretty pronounced betting favorite in the series, but I view it as more of a toss-up at this point.
So The other thing that was interesting, because you mentioned about Miles Turner in particular with the matchup with Chet. The funny thing to me was I felt like for most of the game, Chet was getting the better of the matchup. Like, there were times that I kind of thought Miles, especially like how bad he looked on the offensive end, was like, man, he looks unplayable. But it kind of goes to show, like, I felt like Chet Holmgren had a similar game to the game that Lamar Jackson had against the Bills in the playoffs, where if you looked at the numbers, he played pretty well, but he also had a couple of plays down the stretch that you felt like kind of decided the game.
Well, he didn't hit a single three. So he takes a lot of threes, and when he's not going to make a single three, I mean, his usefulness is diminished, because let's not pretend as though he's some sort of a bruiser.
For sure.
You know?
But so, like, that's the other thing. Like, I think that I felt like in game two, I thought they had found the right mix of using Hartenstein and Chet. But last night felt like a night where they're like, man, we can't figure out the right balance.
Well, and I don't know exactly how to quantify this, but man, it felt like Oklahoma City was running on fumes in that game, because, you know, for as much talk as there's been about the quality of their depth, and much of that I would agree with, it felt to me like they didn't really use that depth last night. I mean, for all intents and purposes, it was a seven-man rotation. I mean, Aaron Wiggins got 10 minutes as their eighth guy. But it felt like they were winded. I don't know. Maybe part of that is a game that's more physical, a game that doesn't have five gazillion free throw stoppages. And then, oh, yeah, like Indiana's got some pretty good players coming on. I mean, here's the thing. You're not going to get 20-whatever points from Benedict Mathurin, you know, every night. But Indiana got that last night. And to me, that was like the difference in the game, because Indiana got more production off of its bench than Oklahoma City did. And we've just been talking about this series as though, you know, Oklahoma City is the team with the superior depth. And maybe over the course of seven games, that bears out to be true. But it certainly wasn't true last night.
Yeah, so a couple of things there. If you want to, like, because I am someone, after they lost game one, Jeff asked me on the spot, what did I think the result would be? And I said, I think this series is going to rhyme with the Denver series. And I said, I'll take the Thunder in seven. I feel better about that right now. With that being said, we're one game four away from me being like, man, Indiana is, it's this weird thing of, I think one thing I've struggled with the whole framing of the finals, because I hate when people use the term the media, because it's so generic, and then oftentimes I don't even think people understand like what they mean. I think now when players are saying in a critical manner, the media are not doing their job, or the media do this, the media do that, I actually think what they mean is people are mean to me online. I think it's right. Social media, because from what I actually watch, and I consume a lot of NBA media coverage, I do not see a lot of unfair coverage. In fact, if anything, I see more glorification / bordering on cheerleading than I do anything. Now, I think it is key to note that the TNT crew at times will elevate their careers and talk down on the game today. With that being said, like, that's also, I can also put that into context. Oftentimes, like, people clip it out, but it's like they're talking about, more times than not, they're talking about the physicality of the game. And so I don't necessarily think it's so much them putting their own careers over. Shaq maybe more so than others, but I also would argue this. I think Shaq's career collectively in the consciousness is underrated. Like, I don't think people realize, like, just, I think just, he falls into the category because he was so big. I don't think we truly appreciated how unbelievably dominant he was. Like, there was a finals.
Wow. Hold on, you're telling me like the Gen Zs don't know that Shaquille O'Neal was an elite player?
I don't think they know that he, in a playoffs, averaged 40 and 20.
Oh, well, I mean, I honestly don't even know if I knew that. So
like, I mean, like, he is, like, and yes, it is, he was, at his size, predispositioned to have more success. With that being said, he was still incredible. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I kind of go along with that. But I think more times than not, it always gets framed as, the media doesn't know, the media is wrong, all this. And it's like, I think more times than not, what they're talking about is social media comments. And
well,
like,
and also, I mean, you talk about Tyrese Halliburton and what's become the narrative of the last 2 months in the NBA, which is the overrated label. Yeah, The Athletic is the one who published the article. But
it got, dude, it got some run on a graphic last night.
But the contents of the article were the results of a player poll.
And not only
those were players.
It was a player.
Not the media.
It was a player poll. I did the math last night because it was 90 players were polled. And if you break it out, he had, I think, 14.1.
So it was like 11 players.
Yeah, it was literally, I think it was 14 out of 90. It was like 14.3%. It was either 13 or 14 out of 90.
Right.
And
so
by
it was
the
like
way,
12 players who said that.
And there's no way. First off, they didn't announce who was polled. If you just said they gave the anonymous poll to the Milwaukee Bucks, I bet the whole team voted him. Like, so.
Yeah, no.
Like, it wasn't like as if 60% of the. Like, I think about it. The other one that used to always get used, and you and I will remember this. I don't know how much of the audience will, but Ricky Fowler, before he won his biggest tournament of his career, the Players, another anonymous poll came out, and the Players voted him most overrated. It was by a significantly wider margin than what Tyrese Halliburton was. Like, I'm totally cool with Halliburton, like, using it as motivation, but I think that's one of the more overplayed, like, overused stories that we've had. Because it wasn't, to me, it's like, yeah, the difference between him and like 15th on the list was like 6 votes, like at most. Like, so, but the reason why I was bringing that up is I think there's this weird one struggle, I think maybe nationally, that people seem to have. And this is where I would say the greater media deserves a little criticism. I don't think they've realized how to frame this finals, and one side of it, okay, I can somewhat understand. I get if you watched Indiana post January 1, post Halliburton, you realize this was a very good basketball team, and this was a team that should be taken seriously. But still, coming into the playoffs, most people believed, basketball people included, this entire East was going through Boston and was going through Cleveland, one or the other. And it didn't work out that way, and Indiana deserves credit. They clearly deserve to be here. They're now up 2-1, and they're 2 games away from winning a championship. Like, so, but the thing that makes no sense to me is, how could you get caught by surprise that the Thunder are here? Like, they were clearly the best team in the West the entire season. But it feels like...
It certainly didn't catch us off guard in the city of Memphis after what they did to the Grizzlies in the regular season and then in the playoffs.
And like, what I couldn't figure out is, okay, did just everyone get swept up in Lakers post Luka? But that's the thing. I never really saw anyone thinking the Lakers were going to win the West.
Well, here's the thing. It's like, okay, maybe we expected Oklahoma City to be here, or maybe we should have. But once they get here, then it's like, oh, everybody wants to say it's going to be a sweep at max, a 5-game series. And so I think the narrative that everyone's been waiting for to unleash, to roll with, is, oh, wow, the arrival of the Oklahoma City Thunder and the beginning of a new dynasty.
Yeah.
I mean, I've talked about that. I thought that's what we were getting into. And so it's like, man, like, when are we going to actually give Indiana its credit here? When are we actually going to acknowledge that Indiana deserves to be in this series and has a very legitimate chance to hoist the trophy here, you know, in a week's time? I mean, that to me is where we're missing the mark, is on respecting what the Indiana Pacers are doing.
The Pacers,
I mean,
yeah, are now,
Halliburton,
to your point, the Pacers are now at a point where they can win an NBA championship without having to win a game the rest of the way at Oklahoma City. They get 2 opportunities at home to win a championship.
Yeah, and they've already beaten Oklahoma City on the road 1 time.
Yeah.
I mean, so they've proven they can do that as well. So, and to me, with OKC, it's like, in this star-driven NBA economy that we live in, like, the Tyrese Halliburton thing gets played out in people's minds and they get sick of it. And it's like, okay, well, then why don't we talk about the rest of that roster and what looks like a really cohesive, well-constructed team? And
let's take that point, because I actually think you touched on something there, and I think maybe that's the larger issue. I think for so many people that have been used to covering and talking about the NBA in a particular way, which has largely been star-driven, if you think about, in particular, the last 2 champions, or whoever, Boston last year, yes, they have Tatum and Brown, but like, the real story of that was even if you thought Luka was the best player in the series, which was debatable, and I acknowledge that, basically everybody thought eight of the next nine best players were on Boston. And right. So I think what we're doing is we're transitioning into this era where it is less about are your best players dominant, and it's more about are the 8 to 10 guys that you play better than the 8 to 10 guys on the other team? Because what I think coaching and the NBA has gotten so good at is if there is a weak link on the floor, they find that weak link every single time and they exploit it.
Right.
And so you can't afford to have three great guys and then, you know, maybe a decent role player and then kind of a collection of minimum rookie, young, however you want to define it. Like
the Lakers, basically.
You correct. Can't be the Lakers. Or like what the Warriors have become.
Sure.
Like I think that's what's getting exposed. And I think the problem is everyone that has basically covered the NBA for as long as they have, like that is a significant transition.
Oh, well, no doubt. No. So nobody gave Indiana a chance of having comparable depth, comparable players 2 through 8. And it turns out they do. I mean, it's a different guy every night, sometimes multiple players from within the ranks of their depth. You think about the big plays Obi Toppin made down the stretch, the putback dunk, the big-time block. Mathurin's on a heater. TJ McConnell gave him a huge lift and didn't even play down the stretch. And then it's like Aaron Nesmith and, you know, even like Ben Shepherd.
Yeah.
Coming in and making plays, you know, and so
Tommy Bryant. Have you mentioned him yet? Tommy Bryant's hit some big shots.
Yeah, he's played a little bit, you know. So it's, I it's like that second layer of the OKC roster has got to step up because I feel like SGA is doing what SGA does. Jalen Williams is doing what Jalen Williams does, and then it's man, can you get anything from the rest of the group? I mean, I realize you know Alex Caruso isn't the guy that you're looking to knock down shots, and he's kind of just you know a defensive specialist or glue guy, but you know you got to have somebody, whether it be Lou Dort or you know like Aaron Wiggins. Like Aaron Wiggins played really well in Game 3 and gave him a lot in Game 3, and he barely got off the bench last time.
Grizzlies fans are aware. Grizzlies fans are aware that because I remember I can't remember if I was talking to you about it, but I think it was either the third or the fourth game against the Thunder, and I just remember thinking to myself, if Aaron Wiggins were on the Grizzlies, like he would be at worst their fourth best player.
Yeah, no doubt. And but he barely got off the bench.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like that was because when I think about whether or not last night's flipped, I'm in this weird spot where it's like I still think that if the Thunder win Game 4, I'm cool. Like I think they're gonna they probably win in 7. Like I think that's how it plays out. But now it's that weird thing of okay, there's two things. There's one thing I didn't expect, and there's one thing that I'm now starting to say it may be more than a sample size problem. The one thing that I did not expect is exactly what you're touching on. I knew the Pacers had depth. Like we've seen it throughout the course of the playoffs. I thought the Thunder's depth was better. But if you look at the first three games, and I had it written down, I don't have my piece of paper anymore, so I'm doing it from my memory. But the Pacers bench has essentially outscored the Thunder's bench through three games, 132-92. They basically outscored him by 40. I'm off by maybe a point or two there because I'm having to do it from memory. So, and in when you look at it, there's really only been one game in which the Thunder's bench outplayed the Pacers bench, but it was close. It was game two, and it was like 48-44. But the other two games, it was a wide margin. And so, if you want to talk about something that has made me really be like, oh, well, this could be different. To me, I start from a basketball perspective of their bench is outplaying the Thunder bench, and it's been noticeable. The second thing, and it was one of those ones where I didn't really know how seriously to take it because it was such a small sample size. But I am now starting to wonder, do the Thunder have a late game one possession problem? Because in the regular season, they were just 1-4. Now, I'm willing to sit there and go, that's five games in a regular season in which, you know, that basically means did the ball bounce the right way? Like,
well, here's what this reminds me of, Jeffrey. It reminds me of Duke.
Yeah.
In the sense that they just steamrolled everybody in the regular season.
Well, to your point, Dan Hurley has talked about this. I think he mentioned it on PMT a few, maybe now it's a month ago. But he had mentioned on last year's team, he's like, we never talked about it publicly, but he's like, you know, we did have a problem in close games. And so that's
so they
what,
just didn't play any close
it, well,
games.
Well, that's what he's like.
Nobody saw
he's
it.
Like, that's why if you will like notice those huddles, when we got it to 10, I'm just berating them. Get it to 20. And he's like, it was simply because he's like, I did not like us in close games. And I think it kind of makes a little bit of sense if you think about it in these terms. When they get late in the game, the offense becomes extremely deferential to SGA go make a play. And when the entire defense knows, all right, he's highly unlikely of going to pull up from three. He's going to try to get into the paint and whatnot. It's like, I think he becomes a little bit easier to defend in that capacity. Over the course of the game, he's still extremely difficult to defend. But when you know it's coming down to, we have to base, he's not going to pull up from three. We know he sure. wants to get into the paint. We know his tendencies. We've seen how the game's been playing out. Like, that is something that I'm actually curious about because, you know, they win. What did the final in the Grizzlies game three? Didn't it end up like 4 or 5? I want to say, I don't think it technically ended up as a 3-point game. They got, I believe, a 2-point win in game four against the Wolves. But then when you start thinking about like a lot of these toss-up games that were like basically one possession, they've come out on the wrong side. And I am also wondering, like, part of it is, hey, man, like, how much of it is, let's go get in the paint. We're expecting contact. And, man, those last 30 seconds, it's like, you better draw blood because they let it go.
I to rebuttal your take,
all right.
I don't really think Indiana's very good in the clutch either. I mean, you
no,
watch
but
that game
they're,
last night, boy, they were,
no,
they
I
were
agree.
Trying so hard.
I agree
so
with
hard
you.
To get that game away.
I think the one difference, though, is if Halliburton takes a shot from 18 feet, I think it's going
yeah,
in every
yeah,
time.
Right.
But
yeah,
I
he's,
I
he's
agree.
All they got. Like,
no,
you're,
I agree.
You're not,
these teams
not
are kind of
secondary playmaker on their team who you're willing to give the ball to and say, hey, go get us a bucket.
Like, no, I totally
either,
agree.
It's either Halliburton or SGA, and both these teams have good complementary pieces, but I mean, you think about it, like, who is Indiana's second best player? It's probably Pascal Siakam.
I think it's Siakam. You could tell me in this series it's winding up being Turner just because he has been so dominant in the paint, but I think it's still Pascal.
Yeah, and even, you know, he's not a guy that you're preferring to run an ISO for late shot clock.
Absolutely
late
not.
Game. You know, he's a downhill, get-to-the-basket kind of guy, too.
I have the Thunder's full road to this point.
Yeah.
How many points do you want me to cut this off at when it comes to close games late? Because the Grizzlies series, the last two games, it was a 6-point win for the Thunder in game three, a 2-point win in game four. That was 117-115.
Didn't Dez hit a three? Like, wasn't
it was
one
like
of those,
a late
wasn't point. It like a 5-point game? Dez hit a three and then they got the ball in and we couldn't get it back?
I think so, in game four. They lost a 2-point game to Denver in game one. The rest of those weren't super, super close. Game four was a 5-point game. Thunder win on the road.
That was a tough win.
That was a gritty win. The T-Wolves series, the only really close game was game four.
That was a great win,
126.
Too.
But other than that, the only other close game was the 111-110, and that was a loss.
And I want to be clear. I also acknowledge that can be misleading only in the sense of close games can also somehow wind up with, like, who kind of worked the clock a little better. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you just wind up taking the last shot. Like, I don't know. Like, but I've gone from fully dismissing it as sample size to now I am going, maybe there is something to it.
So you ready to come over to my side? You ready to say that the Indiana's
no,
got a real chance to win this series?
Because I still, in my head, I still think this is the Denver series. And they've been really bad in game threes throughout the playoffs. Like, the Grizzlies were going to absolutely send them to the curb had Ja not gotten hurt. They're up 29, and that was, like, going a certain way.
Yeah, that's true. Then they lose game three at Denver.
Now, they played better in the Denver game three, but they still lost that. And then their worst game of the playoffs is game four. Or I'm sorry, I beg your pardon. Game three of the Timberwolves series.
They lost that game by 42 points.
Yeah, I mean, that's their worst game of the playoffs.
Maybe of their whole season, because that game was just awful.
Yeah, I mean that. I mean, and also like I do credit Minnesota. Like Minnesota came out because that's kind of the other thing that's like about last night.
How much of this was like, okay, it's our first game back in Indiana?
Indiana, the crowd was nuts. They were clearly playing with a lift. I'm still at the point where it's like, if you told me that this series, like, I thought the most likely outcome of the two games in Indy were going to be a split. And that's still possible. Now,
well, I think this series comes down to Friday night.
That's the sad thing is like night, I totally agree with you. Like it's like
I don't want to be
wishy-washy, but it's like I still believe in Oklahoma City at this point right now. But my thing is if they lose game 4, I'm with you completely. And then at that point it's like, well, then you're just jumping on when it's a 3-1. Like thank you, Captain Courageous.
Well, I mean, they're talented enough to win 3 straight games against Indiana, but I don't think a team with this amount of youth and this lack of playoff experience is going to win 3 in a row.
Well, and seriously, I love that point though, because like how often has the back been have their backs been against the wall? Like this is a team
game 7 against Denver. That was it.
Yeah, and they got it at home and they blew the doors off of them. It's still why, like, I still think this series, it still, to me, mirrors that Denver series, and I still feel okay because I felt like, I do think a key moment that you referenced, I thought the way the third quarter closed, where Indiana felt like it kind of recaptured momentum, taken kind of, not like outright control of the game, but they were playing from ahead, and then all of a sudden, a couple of mistakes, the last minute, OKC goes from down 1, up 5, and then you didn't think about it. Then OKC basically got to start the fourth quarter with the ball, and I'm sitting there going like, oh, this could like be a 3, basically, everyone's like 2-for-1. This could have been like a 3-for-1. And I was like, oh, they might take control. Indiana gets a key stop, and like they flip it right off the bat, and then basically like from like the 10-minute mark on, it felt like they were the ones that were making the Thunder come chase them.
Man, I tell you what else could alter that complexion of the game is if they had actually called that a flagrant on Neesmith.
Oh, the nut shot?
When he tackled Caruso going to the basket.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It looked like it was a nut shot as well.
So Neesmith wraps him up, both hands over Caruso's shoulders. The crew seemed to think it was obvious it would be a flagrant one, and it wasn't.
I was actually going to mention that. Maybe we'll save it for the list because there are a couple other things, but I feel like the ESPN rules guy quietly has like one of the best batting averages. And it's like, I don't know if he has, like, I don't know if like, is he doing it from the truck? Is he doing it from where the NBA is? Like, it's almost to the point where it's like, is he doing it with the replay officials? Because it feels like he has, like, I just can't tell, like, I want to give him credit. If he's that good, he's that good. But like, I feel like he swings and misses a lot less than other guys.
Well, Adam Silver would have you know that he just happens to work for a network that really takes the NBA.
That's true. They do. They know. They're always going to be a basketball first product.
Sure.
Yes. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll talk with Eric next. We'll find out if Eric was in the building at Game 3, but we'll also talk about it with him next, right here on Jeff Wright and Company. 92.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
FM, ESPN.
That music means we welcome on the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. He, of course, is Eric Hasseltine, kind enough to join us each and every Thursday. Eric, we have to solve the mystery. Did you make it into the building for Game 3?
I did not. We made an executive decision.
You made a business decision?
It was highly influenced by High Noons and Tito's.
Golf beverages.
Stay in a bar and watch it.
Golf beverages.
But we were down there, so it was fun.
All right, so I guess this is – we'll start here. It's like I don't know how to – I want to be very, like, respectful and acknowledge what the Pacers are doing. I'm not in this camp of, like, the Pacers still don't belong. But is it wrong if I still think, like, if the Thunder win Game 4, like, I'm still not convinced that the Thunder aren't winning? Like, I'm struggling very much of, like, how to appropriately acknowledge what the Pacers have done while still saying, like, I still think if OKC wins Game 4, I think they're fine.
Yeah, I think if they win Game 4, they're fine because they put themselves in the position of strength to then go get Game 5 at home, and then you're coming back to Indy with a chance to close it out, and all the pressure's on the Pacers. So, look, I listened this morning with a phenomenal trivia battle, by the way. Well done.
No
one
missed. I was
screaming answers at the car. I was proud I knew all of them, although I did get the Venezuelan product. I said coffee as well. I didn't think.
I had a 50-50, and that was one I truly just guessed, and I came up on the right side.
There you go. It was good stuff. They also export baseball players.
They
do.
Lots of them.
Really good ones.
High level.
But I think, you know, just watching it last night and watching the series, and Indiana's done what they do. They play hard. They never let go of the rope. They get down double digits. Every time they get down big numbers, everybody, you know, oh, here we go. Here comes the Thunder blowout, and they just keep coming, and they just keep coming. And the Grizzlies saw that firsthand when they played them right out of the All-Star break. I mean, the Grizzlies had a phenomenal first quarter, had the Pacers, I think, down by double digits at one point, maybe not quite, but they were kind of controlling the game. And then, lo and behold, a 50-point quarter for the Pacers kind of shifts the entire momentum. Shocking how that happens.
Yeah.
But they just don't stop. And it's not just their depth, it's their style. And, you know, I heard Robert Parrish on over the weekend on Sirius talking with one of the weekend shows with Rick Mahorn, and he just said, that's the way Rick Carlisle played. It was all about together. It was all about working as a team. Even though he wasn't a big minutes getter on those 80s Celtics team, he was one of the guys in the locker room that brought everybody together, and that's why he's such a good coach. And so they're playing, they've taken the style of their head coach, and I think that's evident by the fact that they get down 10, 15 points, they know right away, and I've kind of been keeping an eye on that. They'll be down 15, and you'll look up, they'll call timeout, they come out, and they go on a 10-0 run. And then, you know, Mark Daigneault and his team can do the same thing. But I just think they keep using their depth to their advantage, their aggressive nature to their advantage. I thought you guys pointed out some good things when you're talking about getting out and running. Like, where did the Grizzlies go wrong? I'll be honest, this is going to sound crazy because I know they just got stomped in game one. But if you go back to game two and game three where they did make shots and let go of the lead, game four where they never had the lead but they got close, they just missed open shots.
Yeah.
I mean, they just missed open shots, and the Pacers are not. They're hitting those corner threes. They're hitting those wing threes. And I think the Grizzlies kind of laid the blueprint down for what you have to try to do, you know, aside from making shots, which is, at the end of the day, the key thing. You can't pass up a good shot for a great shot because the great shot closes out quickly. That's how aggressive their defense is. When you get a good shot, you got to take it. You got to keep them on their heels. You got to keep them as unsettled in the defensive side as you can. You've got to turn live ball turnovers into opportunities to run. You have to make sure your turnovers are not, you know, rip and runs or just, you know, balls thrown right to the other team. A 24-second shot clock violation, you can get back. It's still a turnover, but that's what didn't hurt Indiana as much in game one was the Pacers turned it over a bunch, but they didn't give up a ton of points off those turnovers.
Not as so. Many live ball turnovers, it didn't feel like.
Yeah, and that's the thing against that defense. You keep trying to make that extra pass, and it's almost like they're trying to bait you into that. They know that's the motto of the NBA mentality. So I think it's sustainable. Obviously, game four now takes on a huge, huge meaning because, I mean, it was going to be that way one way or the other. If Oklahoma City had won game three, now the Pacers' backs are against the wall. They can't drop game four. This series is over in five, and it's the gentleman's sweep. So they go get game three. And the Thunder are still going, okay, well, we're right where we should be. You know, I mean, kind of. If we win this game, we're back on having home court advantage, and we go win game five at home, and we're a game away from having a parade in Oklahoma City. If they go out and they don't look good and they lose game, you know, game four and Indiana holds serve at home, and then your backs are against the wall and you got to win three straight. Can they do it? Sure. Indiana hasn't let anybody do it to them since early in the season, so I don't know how likely it is. If there's a team that could, it would be them. I hope that Indiana doesn't go in with the mentality of, hey, we're playing with house money now.
Yeah.
I'm going in with the mentality of, we're down 0-3, we have to win this game. And I think Rick Carlisle will have them in that mindset. I don't have a doubt about that.
How are the vibes in Indy? I got to imagine having the finals there, especially with the result of last night. Your buddy's probably selling a good bit of tequila.
And Nooners.
It was, the Nooners were in his house, so those were purchased at the local grocery store. It's great. I mean, from where he lives, which is about 25 minutes out of downtown, a little suburb called Zionsville, all the way into downtown. So we basically... Everybody at the golf course that he belongs at all day long, that's all you heard people talking about. When I got there Tuesday, I asked Mark Kestisher the same thing when we golfed. He's like, it's an awesome environment to be a part of, even if the ratings are saying otherwise. People in Indianapolis are stoked. Everybody that we saw yesterday, obviously you're going towards the arena, was decked out in Pacer gear. Just hearing every Red Auerbach on the sidewalk with their analysis of how they needed to get game three and then being in a place right near the arena where it was packed. I think people came down that didn't have tickets just to be part of the nightlife and be part of the environment. Now, I had a very early flight this morning, so we kind of ejected at halftime and went home and watched the rest, which was a lot of fun. But it was a fun environment to be in. And then what I found amazing today was in the line at TSA, how many guys had Pacers final shirts on from last night. And I'm like, wow, there's a lot of people that just came up for game three and are heading out. Because obviously, you know, people relocate. And if you grew up in Indianapolis and moved to wherever and you want to see this is your lifelong dream, you're going to come up. So it made tickets a little tougher to get. You know, we debated whether we wanted to spend the money just to be in the building. But both of us, honestly, had been to an NBA Finals game, and we're like, hey, you know, we're just cool hanging out and catching up because he's a very close friend and, you know, doing that. And it was a blast to be in the environment of true Pacer fans who were there to watch a game and watching how the game unfolded. I didn't even hear panic in their fans, guys. It was wild. Like, they fell behind early, and everybody's like, this is fine. We're good. They literally have that belief because they've pulled it off now four times where they've been down, what? They were down 15 yesterday, I believe, at one point, right? What was the largest lead for the Thunder?
15, let me pull it up. I felt like last night was like the first time that I didn't feel like they were down 15 in the third and won. But that was the other thing.
No, not in the third. It was in the first half.
Yeah, but like that was the other thing. They flashed the stat, or maybe it was Matt Moore. The Pacers are now 4-4 when trailing after three quarters in the playoffs. Like, that to me itself is like insane.
That is insane.
You never see that.
That's one of the superlatives I always like to have on my game boards is what a team's record is when they're leading or tied going into a fourth, because it shows how do you close games? Where do you go? And obviously the elite teams like the Thunder, the Celtics, the Cavs, the Pacers, the Nuggets, take your pick, their record's usually very good. But then I also look at when trailing. You don't see a lot of teams with more than 8 or 9 wins, yeah, maybe 10, trailing in the fourth. You see a lot of, all right, you're 44-1, you know, when we play them, and we're at game 65, and then you're 5-15, you know, so you're 50-16, but you're 5-15 when you're trailing going to the third, and that's an elite level team. So to be 4-4 in the playoffs is just, I honestly think that's the most impressive stat you can say, because they've been down with their backs against the wall multiple times. And they just don't stop. And so hearing people as that first half was coming to a close, and I even said, this is a big stretch, these last couple of minutes, can you get a little bit of momentum? Can you knock a couple shots down? Can you just prevent them from extending the lead? And they found a way to do it. And, you know, Ben McMathurin showed up. He's been in and out of the lineup at times this year with injuries and because of poor defense, but there's no doubt the guy can get you buckets. I just think the way Rick Carlisle has managed his bench as well has really helped. And to me, I think, and I'm not trying to nitpick Mark Daigneault because I think he's a phenomenal head coach, and I rarely go listen to coaches talk before games when we're calling a game. I enjoy listening to Mark Daigneault and his demeanor and the way he breaks the game down, the way they're thinking, where it's almost like that age-old saying, they're playing chess when everybody's playing checkers. And that's the way he's trying to keep the mentality. But I think he made a mistake. I would try to make somebody adjust to us. I think taking Hartenstein at times out of that lineup and running with Cason Wallace, which they did at times with Hartenstein in the lineup when Holmgren was hurt. But I think when you have Holmgren and Hartenstein out there together, you make teams, like, figure it out, because you're not going to get a lot of rebounds and you're not going to get a lot of second chances. You move a 7-footer out for a 6'2", strong as an ox, athletic guard who's just basically another Lou Dort. They're the similar players, although I think Wallace is probably going to have a better offensive career ahead of him, even though Dort's been solid. I think that plays a little bit more into the advantage. I would make Indiana try to adjust to us and see if Chet Holmgren could chase Pascal Siakam around. Can he go out and get Aaron Nesmith or whoever else is in that starting lineup? And I think that's worked to their advantage. It would not shock me to see if they go back to two bigs at some point in this series.
So it said largest lead either way was 9 last night, but I was like, I swear to God, I thought it at least got to double digits.
I thought it got into double digits. I would have to look at the.
I've got the game book in front of me. So it said both ways was 9 points, but I'm with you. I swear I thought it was more than that.
Yeah, either way, they're down, and it looks like, you know, the Thunder I thought they were controlling the tempo in that first quarter and second quarter. And again, you come out and here they come. And I don't think it's anything that the Thunder are doing wrong. I think it's what the Pacers are doing right. Sometimes you just have to tip your cap to another team is just playing a little bit better basketball in key moments. And then that's been Indiana in the two wins. And in the one win for Oklahoma City, they dominated.
So, Eric, in the time that since we last talked, the Grizzlies announced that Zach Edey suffered an ankle injury during some offseason training and is going to miss the beginning of the 25-26 season, man. Like what in the world? Like, when are we safe? Like, if you're getting injured in late May, early June, it just feels like this franchise, right, from an injury perspective is snake bitten. And I'm just curious, sort of like, your thoughts on just maybe how that impacts his development, how it changes the complexion of this offseason and you know, training camp and in the first couple months maybe of this upcoming season.
Tell you what, I get the question all the time. You know, it happened right around the weekend, and people start sending me text messages, and I'll be out at my son's baseball tournaments, and, you know, other parents that I know out there, kids on other teams, are like, man, how about that Zach Edey injury? At times I just want to go,
what?
Yeah, can we not talk about that? Can we just talk about anything but another injury? And it's tough. I've never seen it. Because you go back and you look at Gigi Jackson. You look at Vince Williams last summer. You look at a year before, like one preseason game, and Zaire Williamson, who was slated to be one of your guys, plays one game and then has tendonitis and can't go because they're afraid his knee's going to pop if he does. And you're like, I don't know. I don't know when it ends. It's wild to me how unfortunate this stretch has been for this team. And I was telling somebody, and I heard some criticism and talking about Taylor Jenkins, and when I say this, and I love Chris Harrington to death. Chris Harrington is 100% right when he says, you know, the fact of the matter for Taylor Jenkins now that the reports are the Knicks are looking at him, and, you know, I'm pretty sure that's accurate from what I've been told. And they like him, so we'll see from what I was told. But I don't think it's fair to hold the Lakers series over his head. The Warriors series, you lost Ja, and by all accounts, that season, without the Steph Curry injury, the Warriors are going to be the two seed.
Yeah.
I think the Grizzlies caught them on a run, and their mistake was they didn't think they could catch Denver, and then they almost did. They would have been the one seed because Denver had a monumental lapse of good basketball down the stretch that year, and then they ended up edging out the Grizzlies by a game. So, yes, they were the higher seed against Golden State. There were injuries in play, not only for Golden State to be the three seed, but also the Grizzlies during that series. Series against the Lakers, you took Steven Adams and Brandon Clark off of their lineup. How were they going to box out Anthony Davis and anybody else? And you look back to game one, that's the only game that swung the series. Everybody else won a home game after that. And it's offensive rebounds that get kickouts to Hachimura or Austin Reeves, whose guys have vacated the spot because they don't think those two guys are going to go for the offensive board. But nobody could keep AD off the glass or LeBron off the glass. And then they find a wide-open shooter, and to their credit, they made those shots. I think holding Taylor Jenkins accountable for that series is a tad unfair. And I go by this, and I've told people this all the time. One of his best coaching jobs had nothing to do with teams winning a division title for the first time ever, multiple seeds in the top three, multiple times at 50 wins. His best coaching job to me was last season, not this year, the year before with all the injuries. There is no way on earth that team should have won 30 games. None. Zero. I don't care what you say. Like, they had Ja Morant for 9 games. They had Desmond Bane for like 22. They should not have won 30 games. They were winning games and fighting, and the games they lost, if you guys remember, we talked about this a lot. You'd play for 3.5 quarters, and you're right there, and then you look up, and you got 4 guys that were either in the G League or not in the league on the floor with Jaren, and you're looking across at Paul George and James Harden and Kawhi Leonard for the Clippers, or Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Drew Holiday for the Celtics, and you're trying to close out games with those guys, it ain't happening. You got Hall of Famers closing out against guys that are hoping to find another contract, and that's why that line of demarcation is there, and that's why, you know, people say you got to have the Jimmies and the Joes. It's not all X's and O's. And, you know, as Jerry Sloan would put it, you can't win the Kentucky Derby riding a jackass. You got to have a thoroughbred. And that's just kind of where I thought he did a phenomenal job of keeping them competitive. Nobody in their right mind would have looked at that situation last year and if those guys had gone, it's just hope. Like, what are we doing? And kind of let go of the rope and just got frustrated. That never happened. Those guys played to above what their capabilities appeared to be and got better. And to me, that's a big, big sign of what's happening. And this injury bug, as Cobb brought it up, that's been the biggest issue. I would have loved to have seen Taylor Jenkins have a healthy team for an entire playoffs. They beat Minnesota with a healthy roster. Ja gets hurt. They got to have guys banged up. The next year, they lose Adams and Clark. The next year, they lose everybody. The first year was in Utah. They were learning the ropes. I get it. Like, a guy's been in the locker room 6 years. You feel it's time for a change. You got to make the move. But this injury thing is like nothing I've ever seen with one franchise. Like, in the off season, in the regular season, in the, you know, silly season, whatever you want to put it, that they find a way for guys just to not be available, unfortunately. And as we've always talked, sometimes your best ability is availability.
Eric, we really appreciate it, my man.
Guys, have a wonderful Father's Day, both of you.
Same to you.
That's a special day for all of us that are dads, but I know both of you have very little ones, and that makes it even cooler. I can attest that I am blessed to have an amazing 20-year-old daughter who's finished up her junior year at Santa Cruz, and a wonderful 13-year-old boy. And when an old man tells a young father this, I hope you take it to heart. Enjoy the times while they last, because it's really cool watching them grow and develop into better people than we are. And those years you guys are in the midst of right now are some of the coolest I can ever recall. I love looking back at those pictures. So enjoy that day on Sunday, and we'll talk again next week, fellas.
We appreciate it, buddy.
Later.
That is Eric Hasseltine. It also, Cobb, come on. It's a day where we get guilt-free golf.
Hey, it's my my first Father's Day. You had your first Father's Day last year,
last year.
Yeah, what'd you do?
Guilt-free golf. It's my wife asked me, like, what do I want? It's like, I want to be able to play golf without you blowing my phone up or holding it against me. That's it.
Yeah, I'm going to go watch the final round of the U.S. Open with my 90-year-old grandfather.
There we go. So. That's what it's all about. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we get into the list. We'll discuss that very news that Cobb had mentioned about Indeed, perhaps. I guess. I don't know. I'm very curious about Taylor Jenkins with the Knicks. Obviously, Mike Brown also included in that report, so we'll discuss that. A little bit more on the NBA Finals, U.S. Open more. We'll do that. Jason Smith also coming up during the next hour. Stick around and listen to Jeff Wright.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.